The first question goes as like this. Please, can you explain the perception sanya and consciousness vijnana and wisdom panya in relation to the experience of anapanasati meditation? Sanya, panya, vijnana, this is a very favorite character in commentarial. It is, as far as the definition is concerned, sanya, vijnana, panya, that is what it is. When a small kid, while playing on the ground, in the lawn, it happened to find a gold item, earring or a ring or something like that, and it finds it is something special. The heavy weight is there, the glittering nature is there, so therefore it gets kind of a sanya. This is not just a piece of rock, and therefore it brings it to the mother and says, "Here, mother, I found something like." And the mother understands it, where did you find it, this is very valuable, and this is gold, kind of thing, more than the child. The mother understands it, appreciates it in a higher level, but even then if she wish to value it, is what is the correct in this kind of thing, she has to bring it to the whetstone with the professional person, he will do the test and say, this gold is so and so. So, sanya is like the children's understanding, vijnana is like the mother's understanding, panya is like the goldsmith's proper understanding. So, this is how the commentarial examples are given. So, in anapanasati, our sanya is often changing if you keep directly with the anapanasati for long, right? First, we ask to see individual characteristics, but if you manage to see the individual characteristics for a long time, the individual characteristic will fade off and then instead the common characteristic will come into being. So when that happens, our perception towards anapanasati is drastically changed. For example, as far as the individual characteristics are concerned, the person, the meditator can understand him, the meditation is progressing. Can see this is in-breath, this is out-breath, these are the individual characteristics of in-breath and out-breath. But when everything is becoming fade off and the common character appears, it usually interest reduces the boredom and monotony sensing, and therefore, due to this changing of the sanya, many people interpret it in a negative way and destructive way, they give up the meditation and get up and go. That is why the understanding of sanya is necessary. Whenever the common characters are coming up, the fading of nature, the boredom, the monotony is a common thing. So therefore many people always changing their feeding and their clothes, dwellings, all the things are always changing. That is the consumerizing society, and so that we fail to understand the suffering as such. Instead the Buddha says, look at one object for a longer time, then there is a sensational transference that is happening in the sanya skanda. So through the sanya, many those who go with the rational mind fail on the job on the halfway because they are not well instructed. The instruction is you must have a choiceless awareness. Whatever may be the changes happen, don't give up, just continue the observation. Then you can have understand what not on the common individual characteristics, you can understand the common characteristics too. If that is the case only, you are becoming qualified to do insight meditation. Otherwise, you will be kicked off because of your early judgment. Lack of observation and early judgment make you inefficient yogi. So instead, when the meditation masters this is, whatever the thing happened for the discouragement, whatever the thing happened for the boredom and counterfeiting, expect it. Be prepared. Don't give up. Continue it. That is how you become master, develop, not on the individual characteristics, you can understand the common characteristics also, then only and the mind becomes prepared to see evolution of the very same object. So that is evolution. Buddha recognizes as the changing nature, that is called viparinama or anicca, the changing nature. But our mind at a time refuses to see this changing nature, even though it is manifesting under your very nose. Your sanya is blocking it, unless otherwise you are accepted. So therefore, you must have theoretical understanding, you must have kind of deductive knowledge, even the situation become unpleasant, situation become boredom and monotonous and fearful and lost, you must have the courage to go there. That is to overcome the hindrances due to the sanya, and when you go further, only you can understand the changing nature of the material. But still, your mind is not sharp enough to understand the changing nature of the mentality, the material thing. But unless otherwise you develop a certain amount of skillfulness in the materiality, you are not qualified to see mentally. That's why Buddha in Satipatthana keeping the Kayana Prasana first, that is contemplating on the body as body, the materiality, and then once it comes up to a certain satisfaction, skillfulness, then only you become qualified to see Vedana Vasana, the material mentality, and then only you are qualified to become Chitta Vasana and Tapa Vasana. They are in a gradual process, that is because of the sanya. The sanya is recognized as a mirage. That's a classical example the Buddha has given is the mirage. The mirage is something like happening in the heated air on the surface, and at a distance it appears like a body of water with some fills and waves. But of course there is no water, it is the utter heat is there. So therefore the Buddha is telling that the deers and the other wild animals in the deserts and in the dry season, seeing the mirage, they are chasing behind thinking it is the water, and ultimately whatever the distance you chase behind, the distance between the mirage and the person never comes close. More and more you run, the mirage also running at the same speed, so therefore you can't reach it. Even if you reachable, that you meet only the heat, not the water. Exactly the same way the sensuous pleasure or sexual pleasure. It appears like something achievable and appeasable, but no one in the world ever be satisfied about this sensuous pleasure. But still the whole world is chasing it. So it is like a mirage. So therefore the Buddha says, it appears like existing, but to the truth it is not existing. The whole world is, I see something existing, what I see is existing, the existing what I can see, that is the physics, but that is not true as far as the mirage is concerned. Exactly, when you understand the sanya, in the modern science says, what you see, that you are. Wherever you go, there you are. What you see is not what really existing, what you see is what you wish to see, what you like to see. And that is how our mind is camouflaging. That is earlier thought when the Buddha was mentioning the yena yena manyati tatotam hoti anyata. The people thought that he is mystic, so he is talking about something only digestible for the Eastern people, not to the scientific mind, and they refused. But now science itself is proving the same. The joke present day is the Einstein physics you can't check with the Newtonian rules and regulations. Einstein physics you can check only with the Buddha's teaching. So therefore now the new interpretation happened. So in the discussion, the Dalai Lama also mentioned first apprehension of the thing and reification of the second thought moment onward, sanya is playing here. First you apprehend it. That is something physically happening. But immediately upon what you have prayed, reification happens. you impose some values upon that, then onward what you see is your values, not the real thing. So therefore, unless otherwise you understand the camouflage or makeshift, shape-shifting nature of sanya, you will fight with other people without any communication. You think you are communicating, but no communication takes place. Communication takes place once you understand this camouflage nature of sanya. So presently is called information technology. So in the information technology, if it is efficient, it must be something to communicate, but today it's a hell of a miscommunication.
For a yogi, it's a tough task for a yogi. So if I have a thought, how do I know whether my thought is under the influence of opinion and view or reality?
So it is called concept and reality. When the concept becomes reality and reality becomes concept, then when Jnanananda has written the book, concept and reality is still a classic. No one can understand unless you go materiality first and then only you can understand concepts. So first you have to understand anapanasati or materiality, the kaya person. Then you only your mind becomes tuned or sharpened to go into the mentality. So therefore the Buddha says, if you are to claim that you know anapana, you have to see all the 11 facets of anapana. 11 facets means you have to see the present form, the past form, future form, desirable form, undesirable form, gross form, subtle form, in form, out form, closer form and far away form. So when the anapanasati is going to show all these kind of things, we get discouraged, we get bored. We think now anapanasati is unlike, I don't like it. I feel it is subtle. Why it is happening like that? So you challenge and you try to put all the experience into your stereotype view or framework. So therefore you never master a single aspect of even the anapanasati. So the Buddha says therefore be patient.
Can a yogi say, yogi meditates for 3 months, 6 months and see, if he sees that what he observes is subject to change, then can he say that I am with reality?
That is also relative at the beginning, but later after mastering, the same thing again and again mastering, he has nothing to say outside because no one to listen. Everyone is believing what they see.
Oh, yeah, but a yogi is now going into this stage and then he has thoughts. Sometimes we observe, even now we observe things, but not deep enough. But the observation gives me, they allow me to dance because of the, if I see a nice car, I want to have it. So the nice car is controlling me. Then I decorate the nice car within my body. But if I see the car getting old and this, which is the reality, our car is not the right example. How now is why I am saying this? The yogi has a tough task. A pattern of observation is there. He doesn't know whether it is under a mirage or reality. So if it is reality, it should have the changing nature. If it is a mirage, you will be decorating or... How does the mirage orders you or... See, because if you are observing something...
That is partly done to bring this point. Whether you are dreaming or not, you don't know in the dream. So you really fantasize. And you, when you get up only, you come to know you are in a dream. So are we in the, what you call, in the awakened situation, still Buddha says you are only dreaming.
We open eyes also, you can dream. We dream open eyes.
Yeah, that is why we daydream. So we yogis can understand which is a dream and which is reality. It's a hell of a task.
Yeah, that's the thing.
For that only the Buddha says, don't arrive at the conclusion, instead observe again and again. That is what called insight.
Insight is
observe from all the possible directions. That is called evenly suspended attention and suspended decision.
Suspect, decision is suspect.
The arrogance is the one pushing you for a decision. Then you get committed, you have to answer. So yogi is the person never committing himself, he says, think I have to answer. The case is sunny, the witness is coming, the judge is not rushing to a decision. He says, yes, you have an objection, please come out. If you have any answers, give. So he gives a free chance for the things to happen. Ultimately, both the parties, even without the judgment's involvement, come to know. That is the way, but present day is pushing us and rushing us to a decision. Then you are a slave. Then you are a slave. But the meditative life is, you vow not to rush. Not to arrive at a decision, each decision is your sankhara become, your karmic forces become, your answer first, so therefore, you just keep on observing that if today you have enough time for feasibility study without putting into a framework. So that is other people, those who are in the multitasking, is a wastage of time. You see, how the, who the hell have the much of time to think about and collecting information, therefore, everyone is rushing. So therefore, yogi is someone going against the grain, from the social point of view.
Yeah.
So not only that, yogi is going against the grain as far as his own wish also concerned. His also wish also shaped by the social values. So therefore, he also wish to have Nibbana quickly.
Yeah, that's right.
To have achievement in the meditation also, to have quickly, so still in the same track.
So can I ask a question about suspended suspicion and sustained attention? Some meditation instructors say, observe and then let go. Everything that comes to your mind, actively let it go. In my experience, you can't just actively let go, you just observe and just observe part of the way. But can you comment on that?
That is why that letting go is the nature. You have to accommodate it, you have to just feel that things are happening, you are involved, you can observe at a distance, and that is the way it is letting go. But you can't do it. Whenever you do, your ego comes to be. Your will, your volition, and your motivation come into being. All these are very tricky things.
So one can observe and let go.
It is not meditation.
When you observe the breath or whatever it is, so you, there's a feeling what you observe. So if you don't induce a mental value to it, then it will go.
That is what the way we sort out our balance in the life.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do letting go or something like that, that is special artificial. So therefore, sometimes when you are putting, our language is very tricky, whether it's passive words or active words. So that one has to understand if you are looking or you are seeing. You are listening or hearing. So that is a very tricky point in the grammar. So in the instructions also, we often, the passive thing, we try to put into active form to make it enlightened. Ultimately, you don't know, you get caught. So that keep the passive words as passive words, the Buddha's recommendation on the morality never a commandment. Other people think to put it as a commandment. Buddha says, there are some moral values, you accept and observe. It's up to you. I am not the person to tell you, you have to do. Then Buddha is committing mistake. And the person doing also becomes a slave. So meditation also such a thing. No one can impose upon others.
Sishyagan, no, see, Sikkhapadam can Sikkhapadam with you.
Restrain oneself.
Restrain
oneself. But it is not the commandment of the Buddha, not the commandment of the priest. That their objectives, their task is to let them know. If you can observe it, this much of result. If you are not, this much of consequences. But that is the way. No one can impose any rule upon another person according to the human rights. But the religion is always with a set of rules to impose upon. But the Dhamma, as such, no such It's an open ticket. No one has any authority. In the Dhamma, no fighting for rights. Never mentioned in the Tripitaka any, how do you call it, Aitivasika?
Rights. Ownership.
Rights, that word never appeared in the Buddha's teaching. It is 84,000 or number of words. Never ask you for any right. He says, your right is to be here and now. But all the other religions, even the Buddhism, is imposing politics. Fighting for rights. It's such a dirty thing. Against whom you have to fight? If there's a creator God, of course you can go and complain. So therefore, when we are practicing also, keep the mind relaxed. Do it, it's like a, as and when it happens, but don't go for a education. Don't do it as a task force. You are still in the same agony. So that is one point as far as the sannyā is concerned. But understand, whole world is depending on this sannyā, on these labels. And that is why the Buddha says, for his initial knowledge, there is nothing in this world without a label. People are so dirty, putting everything, a label or name, into anything.
But after labeling, the concept also comes through.
That's the danger. It's a label, only it happens. That's why Buddha says, anything unlabeled never gives any suffering. Suffering comes through the matter which has been already labeled. Whether it's me or other, whatever may be. Therefore, people never happy if there is something not labeled. So, nomenclature is a big thing in science. Ultimately, he becomes slave to his own labeling. That is why the concept becomes a reality for himself, and that reality will become a burden to his own person. So, if you take it as a volatility, it's just passing thing, then no harm. It is not disturbing your moral responsibility.
The purpose of communication, you must have labels.
For purpose of communication, to communicate what?
Ideas.
The ideas either go for political gain or social or economic.
Education.
Still you can define what to mean by education.
See, we sympathize with education. We sympathize with eyes kind and education and all, but there's a lot of knowledge involved, giving and all. This is
good. So Bertrand Russell, he has taken, he says in the Catholic Church, it says everything on the will of the God. So teaching is what introduced. But only the person Aquinas, Saint Aquinas, he bought a suggestion to the Catholic Church telling there is a certain amount of will, not 100% with the God. So therefore, if you accept that will, I can produce the proposal of teaching, education. So Catholic Church weighed and they told, yes, we accept that Aquinas is not a heretic. And they accepted the will and education, that is why he became the father of education. And then the acceptance of will, it is like a given a barber knife to a monkey, cutting himself, damaging himself.
That's tough to understand. That is tough to understand. Because all our central point is on knowledge. We get proud, I understand. All the time, I understand. We see that we are used to that. I read a book, I understand how what is anapana, I understand. So very difficult to come out of that.
So when you are telling something, I know it. I know. So that's the way we have been used.
Yes.
But what the hell you know? You know how to inflict suffering upon yourself. That's the way you know. That is the only attitude. From the Buddha's point. Instead, he says when the anapana happens, when the anapana ceases to exist, no any intention, you see, everything is there. Fully contented, the whole body experience, and it is out of nothing. It is not from the rupa, or the visual things, or sounds, or nothing. But education. It is called de-learning process, therefore, Western East paper telling the way vipassana means de-learning, deconditioning process. Sanya is conditioning. And it's called learning. Ultimately, you measure how much sanya you have in the question paper and how much you can vomit the same thing. And there was one case when we were in the university. I was just entering university. One of the permanent secretaries in the questioning the people for civil servant to the civil service appointment. He asked, "What is the length of the river of Mahaveli Gada?" And in the book it says 236. But that particular person told, "I don't know." And from point this point, which point to which point is 236? You can say it is at here. Yeah, I will understand from that not particular point. And he told, "You are going to become a civil servant, still you don't know the main river's length." He told, "I don't know. Because it will be changing." And then the ultimately educators questioned the permanent secretary, "Do you know?" Then he told 230. "Did you measure from which point to which point?" "So you were changing." And the measure become a volatile thing. You ask, if you say 236 is your condition, you will get the full marks and you will be a civil servant. If he is challenging that, he will not be qualified to be a good post holder. But I think he is the person only challenging and he is ready. They will never get a job. This is the society.
So the thing is, I will put myself, every one of us, or most of us, always take the knowledge as a shield to protect ourselves.
No, hit others. Hit others. That is the knowledge. Knowledge means you to show your absence.
Humbleness is taken away, no?
That is right. The Buddha says, as far as you have taken it, you are damaging yourself, you are damaging others. So you have to see the danger of this. And knowing that if it is so, you can make use of the well-being of the others. Otherwise, you become arrogant. It's arrogance. It's the end of your progress.
Yeah.
End of your progress.
No, if there's pride, there's end of progress.
So therefore, present day knowledge is a quite question. Because highly educated people in the full of a stress from morning to evening. What the hell they get out of this knowledge? A normal single being, they are doing their farming and kind of thing, they are well happy, living a good family life, happy. But therefore, the sannyā.
But monks also keep to produce a lot of knowledge.
Huh?
The monks and preachers.
They are the main source.
Preachers come and give.
They are the main source because their main job is that. It's a pester.
And after giving the knowledge and they compliment you, you have a nice knowledge and they come again for knowledge.
So that is why that you are very difficult to understand who is benevolent and who is malevolent.
Mm.
That is specifically come under the subject of sanya. Sanya is such a thing, the camouflaging, and therefore once your spectacles are wrong, whatever you see is wrong. That's a very good example. My teacher was a soil, when we had the university, we had the soil science, and there's a genius person, Kalpani. Kalpani was a professor, and under him, my professor was trained. Kalpani is so sharp to get the soil sample and say, this is the color and this is the shape and kind of thing, without the mentioned color chart. He's sharp. My professor is learning, and both of them go to the field, and my professor as a student showing, this is the reddish brown earth. He says, "What, reddish brown? This is not reddish brown." And he says another sample, "This is the long black color." "No." And so my professor is asking, "What is this?" He is checking with the Manson color chart, and telling, "But the professor is not going to see, he is wearing the sunglasses." So whatever he is thing, he is measuring not with the Manson color chart, Manson color chart in his mind. But whatever my professor showed him, he sees through the sunglasses. So it appears like a little darker. So then, luckily at the field, he found that you are wearing sunglasses. Then the problem is still that.
My professor.
To no one. Because we will fight again, don't touch my sunglasses, because it's my human rights.
Yeah, that is right. It's my human
way. That is my human way. That is why Nandamani says, Idarinna, Madadakinna, Magihine. This is our rights. We are that, let me see, my own dream, don't take me up. That is our
right. Sir, there are girls I know whose Lasmish got, I'm true, let me, God, give me a nice dream. They are calling upon dream after dream.
The people give away for alcohol also the same. I mean that they are on birth, they can live, they are the dream world. And it is only the payment of the alcohol. They are behind our own life, don't disturb. It is what we call amusing ourselves, escaping from our main task. For that, the sannyā is a huge servant to appease yourself. Keep it in your own dream, on your alcoholic or alcohol dope situation. And each and everyone has such a escape. But no the other way, we balance ourselves by keeping our mind, giving enough toys, so-called sannyā. So once it is removed, you will understand what a crazy, crazy, mad world. And it is very highly applicable in the information technology. If you observe the advertisements, the newspapers, and everything from even to morning to evening, pouring into yourself, ultimately you will only get confused. So that's the danger of sannyā. So that is why Buddha says, go to the forest, no such advertisements. No information technology, birds, the wind, the rocks and the trees, there is no advertising, no camouflage. So going back is the only way you feel what is unpolluted thing, what is uncontaminated by human, still have the natural nature, natural order. So and then go to the vijnana. Vijnana is discriminating. This is materiality, this is feeling, this is sannyā, like it discriminates separately. So as far as there are fighting between two groups, vijnana gets up there. If you say it's never mind, we are cordial and we are not worried about the discrimination, then vijnana becomes favorable. So vijnana do not like, therefore, to have this common consent. Choiceless awareness. It is the poison for vijnana. So therefore, vijnana is always making riots, making tribal groups, tribal fighting. So vijnana, more and more fighting happens, vijnana gets the upper hand, it gets the jurisdictional power or executive powers. So therefore, whenever the in-breath and out-breath become equal, vijnana becomes upset. As far as they are discriminating, vijnana plays the game. But when they become equal and subtle, then it come out and say, this and that suggestions, you get up and go, this is something wrong, and doubts and all the kind of
things. So you mean to say the observing person or meditator, he's observing a petal within himself or?
It says, W.S. Karmaratna, the professor, he says, there is no battle outside, battle is between your rationality and emotional bit.
Honest
battle. That never, it's ending. Ending means your death. Life is always a friction between the rationalization and the emotions. Or the heart is the emotion, rationalization is the head, and never they are talking each other.
But this is a rescue. If I am emotional, and I fall in love, or in a music, or a girl, or anything, you get slapped from the society, you are bound to do a mistake. And if you are rational, you get a headache, unable to look after the feeling. Now where do you go from there?
So that means two extremes, Buddha says, forget about the extremes and come to the middle. That's the first and foremost. Don't entertain these two extremes. They are very colorful, but they are very taxing. They are very, burning the candle from both ends. So when you come to the middle, it's very pale, it's very boring, it's very monotone. So who the hell can be there? It's better to go there and have some kind of a go-go show, variety of entertainment. So you invariably go into the kind of thing, and when wear and tear happens, again you come and say,
Can you, you talk about a middle? Now, the middle laws is difficult for a normal person to understand. These are two extremes. Can you put the middle as not clinging or is it possible?
The middle is always characterized not clinging. Clinging happens only with the extremes. So, when the not clinging again, you have to understand something now and normality is happening.
So that is a proof for yourself.
That is an attribution of the middle path. Not clinging.
Not
clinging.
Neither views or emotion. Emotion
is what it appears like a monotone.
Is an emotion a view or a feeling?
Both. Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, whatever may be, not titillating, not bubbling up. So therefore it appears like monotonous, it appears like both. And therefore, that whenever it happens, you feel like it's like even colorless, listless. So instead, you like to have a black and instead of black and white, you like to have a colored thing. But the middle part is lying in between, where there is no the attraction, there is no judgmental business, there is no clinging. That is how majority don't accept this religious life, don't accept this spirituality, because it is colorless. It is not attractive, it is not clinging.
But the Buddha made monks to be colorless. Look at the Sivura, look at the...
You can be a monk, no problem.
No, colorless, you know the
I mean, it's an option open for you. Don't look at the monks and point at the monks, it is open. You are a people, you are a human being.
How the Buddha dressed the monks, or he himself dressed. colorless, I mean, there's a color of the Sivura.
Recently, a small girl, young girl, she came with grandfather, and she was looking at me and waiting, and then grandfather was wanted to make friendship with me. So I taught her the Pollyanna. My famous story, and there was a different ceremony, and then she wanted to ask a question, why you are wearing this color? Then I told you, when you live in the forest, wild animals don't see any danger in this color. When the sun rays come through the trees and it is falling upon them, it won't make any hiatus. So you are not a challenge, you are not a threat. If it's a dark red, you do the bullfighting and the bull become very aggressive. But this is the color, it's fading off, not arousing. Not arousing. So therefore it's called, it is the color of, it's a color of the bankruptcy. It's a color of no taste. It's a color of no interest.
But the color comes from the skin of the trees there, right?
Yeah. So the bright of leaves.
Did the Buddha specify it has to be brown or orange or sometimes you get green also?
Kasata.
You know,
yes. Yes.
Kahata can be all the green.
The kahata never will be green when the time passes. Everything comes back to this. Even the fresh green color, you keep it. Fermentation ultimately is, you know, comes to the black color. That's our color. The blue comes to the kahata part.
That's the color, huh?
State. So the sanya, vinya, panya, that is the way. And these word meanings are there, that is what I can communicate with. But it is an evolution in the mind to understand the illusion as illusion. That is what we call panya. And it's very nicely in the, how to call this, Alayatana Vibhanga Sutra, as well as this Chulla Vedala Sutra. Dhammadina says, vijja, avijja is patibhagatata vijja. For my understanding or quantification of ignorance is what you call panya. If you know that much of I am ignorant, that is you are wisdom or wise. If you think that I am a smart, I know, that is arrogance comes and your weakness happens, your ignorance, your avijja, the ignorance is there. The day the you comprehend yourself, this much of I have weaknesses, I have the misunderstanding, that day you become back to earth, natural. So therefore, but you all, in the association with the friends, by maintaining our precepts and meditating kind of thing, understanding my own ignorance. And it appears like something negative, it appears like something nihilistic, it appears like something negative. But then only you can correct yourself. That's why the Buddha says, if you know the disease, diagnose the disease, then only you can find a prescription. Without diagnose the disease, whatever the medicine you are using may not be applicable. So therefore, our wisdom becomes how much I am ignorant, so I ask my friend, I ask my mind everywhere, where the misappropriation happens. If you know it, so much so you can correct yourself. If you do not wish to see it, no way out. You are hiding. There is no way out. So therefore, avijja is patibhaga. Patibhaga means reciprocal with vijja. So that is the Buddha is the real mirror to show how things as they are, reality. And the other one is our spiritual friend, our noble friend. He must reflect the reality, not exaggeration, not undermining. He must reflect the as it is. Then we can see our own. That is what we call. Next one is, could you kindly explain the Sankhara Upekkha? I thought of in the Dhamma talk also to take this subject and go further, whatever may be, the Upekkha is the main term here. Now, Upekkha means that equanimous, or the forbearance, kanti, all the terms are explaining the almost the same. So, our friction, our tension, everything happened because we are not ready to accept the things as they are. The things in the present moment, we wanted to adjust. That adjustment is called sankhara. So the day you feel enough, there won't be any sankhara.
The adjustment is sankhara, not only that is intention.
So therefore, the moment you understand that enough, now I am in the enough, then onward, there won't be much adjustment, there won't be much amendment to all the kind of available, then there you have that. Moment you see not enough, you are a devil, you are a dark. You become aggressive with suppressing others, so whatever the ways means to come up to that what is not enough. And that is how the economic gap we have all the time. Our earnings are not enough to fulfill our desires, so much so the creativity of the mind, so much so the productivity of the mind, because we don't feel enough. In Pali, it is called santutti. Santutti paramanda. The most valuable asset in our life is the feeling of enough, the satisfaction. Unsatiability is a cancer. It's keep on.
That's a good thing, to feel that's enough. Inside, when you feel that's enough, he's the richest man, no?
Yeah, he's the Buddha says, Santuti Pata. So when I was in London, Buddhist Yara, one of my friends presented me a book, name is Enough. And he says, he's not Buddhist.
Yeah, no.
He's not Buddhist. And I narrated one story also. You know Shiroma? You and my two sisters, two daughters. And the younger one day has come and told by me at the dinner table, Mommy, I wanted to have a tattoo in my body, which is in a covered place. And the Shiroma told that it's completely abnormal for a girl to have tattoos, but what to do? And she said, never mind, that is your body, you do it. And then she is still telling the Mommy, I am not going to do it in the exposed area, I am going to do it in the covered place. He says, it is your body. I don't care. I have made up you and now you are up to you, so you do what you. I am going to do tattoo 4 words. And still in the issue of my scholars. And she said, don't you like to have know that what are the words I am going to tattoo? She says, I care. So that is her reaction. Actually, she has told, what I am going to tattoo is, the day you know enough, you are fulfilled.
That's a good thing. Enough is enough. Is the
day you understand this is enough, then nothing necessary. No, not necessary any condiments or anything. This is enough. That we never feel it. Even we are not enough regarding our meditative achievements. Achieving this jnana and that jnana, we never feel enough. So much so we are burning the candle from both ends. So Sankhara Upekha is the level that you understand. This is the maximum we can go. Not a single being in the world died happy. Everyone died with this vacuum, with this not enough concept. So therefore, the moment you understand it, you will start to feel, okay, I am happy, I am enough. Then no one will challenge you. And then no Lord, you can entertain the life what is available. Otherwise, you are always aiming at what is not available and chasing behind, and still you are spoiling what is available.
It's a mundane state.
Huh?
It's a mundane state.
Whatever may be, you can cross from the conventional to the absolute through the term enough. Cross over into the other through the term enough. It is called the santutti. Santutto hoti. That is yatha labha santutti. Whatever you got, that is my merits. If I got it, that's all. Yeah.
How do you give yourself to the feelings, for example, that are not enough?
How do you?
That you long for, that you feel that you are lacking or...
So when it happens, you have to understand this is the dynamite, this is the cancer. So when and where it happens, you can understand, is this me or mine or myself, this feeling? Is it, should I claim it as mine or me or myself? Oh, it's a stranger. The day you're going to see it in that way, you understand they are gate crashes. They just come in. And what the bad thing is, we claim later, it is as me, mine, or myself. Moment you claim it, you get caught. In a positive or negative way. As and when it happens, soon when it happens, earlier the better, you can understand. They are just passing clouds. They are just the inner thoughts, or thought without a thinker. Why should I worry about them? They can come and go. But I am happy. I am here. I am getting what I need.
Thoughts without a thinker is better. Not to understand also. Normally we always feel, I am thinking.
That is what the heart saw, thought. I think therefore I am.
But that's not really true, no?
So if it is so, you can believe Kant rather than Buddha.
No, I think Kant or Descartes.
René Descartes.
Descartes said it.
He's all that cogito, ergo sum, ergo. Cogito, I can't, is it?
Latin.
Cogito?
Ergo
sum. Ergo sum, I don't know how to
because count. I think I am.
I think, therefore I am. So therefore each and everything we justify telling this is me, this is my, this is my soul. So Buddha says, netam mama neso amasmi nameso vata. When a thought happens, just look from that viewpoint. Is it me or mine or my soul? Easily you can say they are just gate crashes, they are just sources passing, just the frills on the water and the waves that
destroy. Most, not only Europe, lot of people use it. I am thinking therefore I am, it's a very wise thing actually, there's no
Therefore they give the medals and kind of thing for the thinkers, but everyone is a great thinker. There's no difference. Everyone is morning to evening, we are thinking. Endless.
Well, that's the problem, no?
We are not living. We live in our the world of thoughts or dream world. So we never get awakened, shaken off. And whenever shaken off, we feel so sorry. And again we go back to our own familiar dreaming. And then feel happy. We feel familiar. And never we go to our dream world. That is why we like to go back home. Home is our dream world. We prepare. And when you go home, you feel homely. You feel at home. And say the due suffering will come in or will you? That's all you need. Renunciation is a hell. Renunciation is a hell that you never think about because you don't get the due suffering. So it is your whole human rights to go back to your home and get the due suffering. And brooding, telling what unfortunate life I have, all the kind of thing. But the Buddha instead gave the renunciation, he's an open ticket. And even the Venkabal, some Venkabal, he told, go to the camp and the forest to see what a wonderful way of scouting.
Did the Buddha ever say, it is my right?
Right to what?
No, in any this thing, did he say, it's my right to be here, right?
I mean, that cannot happen ever. Because there's no the source. So the seed is not there.
Yes. That itself, what a good person.
Right. But Buddha says everyone has that potential. Each and every has the potential, but we don't. We like our own suffering.
No, our lawyers are running behind human rights.
So that the Vishuddhima goes to say that desire for your suffering is something like ignorance. We have our desire for our due suffering. And that is what we like ignorance. And we are fighting for our rights. Our rights means our suffering.
It's a habit, no? Sankara is a habit? Or
in a sense, you can say that addiction. So sankara is addiction. So we feel happy, we feel homely when we come to our own addiction. And when I see your addiction, I accuse you, you are mad, you are arrogant, and you are destroying yourself. But when you are accusing myself, I say, none of your business to accuse me, mind your own business, I have my rights to have my habits.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why we are fighting. Mm-hmm. We are individually fighting to do the same pattern. It says after 40s, invariably you are in the right. Till 40s you are deciding this and that, you are ready to. But after 60s and 70s, you are in such a rut that if someone is going to suggest even, you will back the head out telling that, don't come and interfere into my psychology.
Yeah.
That is my right to suffer in this very way. And they are going to fight with you. So there is at the 40s only you are born, reborn to your psychology. Till that, things are volatile. Things are not much fixed. After 40s, it says, I have my right to suffer in this way. After that, in the Idarina, Magedi, that is what.
No, that is in somebody else the same thing. They say, they. But the point is, they dream, it's alright, but they impose the dream onto us.
Not to the second generation also.
Yeah.
They impose to the second generation, then only this my student, my life, my children are very obedient because they are doing the same bad thing what the mother doing. Same bad thing the father doing, then they are very obedient. But if they do as they like, as they free, they say they are very arrogant, they are not listening and they are not according to our customs and traditions. So they need the fighting. I can talk it because I am not married, I have no children. Otherwise you are committed, you can't play, you can't tell like that because it's something in your blood and your flesh.
Excuse me, I'm a bit confused. That is, you, Buddha or the later monks said there is thinking but no thinker. Where is the way to understand this. When you learn or when you know by yourself that thinking is the one that brings you
out
further, on a wrong way or on a right way. But I have no way to this.
No, I don't know
if Buddha has said this. Is it because he said there is no soul, so this is different, and are mixed up?
No, I put it this way. That all the thoughts are not without thinkers. There are some portion of thoughts, if you carefully analyze, that you not wish to think, but it happens. So that is why the Mark Epstein came to this conclusion. He was a Western psychiatrist, but he first did mindfulness meditation, and they interpreted Western psychology, psychotherapy without the self, one book. The other one is falling apart without breaking into pieces. The other one is thought without a thinker. It's a very bright way he is explaining. So our mistake is we are claiming each and every thought as me, mind and soul, and that is why it becomes a burden. But if you see a certain proportion of thoughts, you don't know from where it comes. Strange thoughts are happening. Not all.
Sir, but I think there's no thinker. You know the reason why? Any thought that generates seeing, hearing, music or whatever it is, it is a process. So if it is a process, it's made out of parts. You know, if you say it's a car, it's made of small parts. But where thinking is concerned, we feel, well, I'm steering. Actually, I'm also not steering. Even if I see a beautiful girl, the beautiful girl is steering me rather than me. You know, if I have good music in my ear, so I feel internally, I'm dancing for the music. But you can take it from another aspect, the music is getting me to dance.
Ich glaube, man muss von der anderen Seite daran gehen.
Ja, den kennt er, aber von der anderen Seite.
Ich weiß nicht wie.
No,
can you understand this? When you only get this, there's thinking, no thinker. So, but how to make people understand how this can go?
I will give you one meditative experience. You are supposed to be in breath and out breath, that is anapanasati. So when you are doing, a thought happens. And now you have taken for a wandering thoughts, and all of a sudden you come to know you are supposed to be with the breath, but you are in thinking. Okay, then immediately you come to know, some people mind them, naturally come back to the breath. Okay, so when this situation happens again and again, you will complain, I can't meditate because of thinking. But if you analyze it and say, while you are in the breath and out breath, the mind is taken a shape and go to the thinking without letting you know. But in the thinking also, mind comes to know you are something wrong somewhere. And then it comes back to the mainstream. So going off from the mainstream is something to be discouraged, something to be unrealistic. But coming back also happening completely as an accident. And you never be happy of that. You don't appreciate it. So my point is, when you are in unmindful situation, you know you are unmindful from where that thought comes.
Okay.
Can you say it is me? I don't know. You are lost. But it happens. That is called the blink. Some blinks are happening. If you are really sharp to understand, that's called things rising of the time. And then if you know that when you are in even unmindful situation, there is a kind of a sixth sense to tell something wrong somewhere. So is it you? Have you programmed yourself to come back? You can't do it.
The Natua Befehl's form, so the imperative. Natua Befehl's form. One says selection. But we put different names. But normally it is convenient to think, I am the thinker. Thinker and the thought is born at the same
that
time.
That is an addiction.
But that is a primitive way of
saying. That is a way of addiction.
Details.
But if you are to think radically, each time mind goes off, you can be discouraged and whatever effort I am going to put, that mind is wandering. But each time it wanders off, it has the nature to come back. So appreciate the coming back journey. Each time going off, you have a reason to be happy. Because it has a nature to come back. So after a certain amount of mindfulness, you understand the unmindfulness under your light of mindfulness. That is what you call the power of mindfulness.
That is what you call the power of mindfulness.
Because you are unshaken, even go off, you know, they also have the silver line in that dark cloud. On the way back is something to be glad.
Yes, yes, yes.
So we don't know. The Putujana never entertained it, but the Aryans are really, really on it.
No, normally the power of mind, we say, I can get what I want to. That is the normal sense of here.
So this is the madness
that went with brought back.
And that is because you early trial and error. This is not given by your parents. It is not by fortune. It is not by the blessing of someone. That you don't appreciate it.
Yes.
You are the loser.
Yes.
You are the loser, so you have to understand there are some kind of thoughts without the thinker, sometimes good, sometimes bad.
But then, you see. But in that case, the all this is wrong. We are proud to get things in the way I want. So that is what...
But the great heaters, the electric power is there when we understand that we are wrong. We are unmindful.
Yeah, otherwise it would have jumped off.
So you don't see the points unless otherwise you are ready to appreciate your mistake. The problem you can come back, happily you can come back.
And that is for the power of the mind.
That is why if you are going to present the Sariputra says that Pamade na kappatiti sarupana. You are in Pamade, unshaken. Then only you can happily come back.
You have to completely total rethink.
And there is feeling but no one who feels.
There are not all. Not all. Not all. That is the escape. That is the escape what I am telling. And the day you understand that only you have the escape. Telling that everything I can't accept. Everything I can't appreciate. There are some things beyond my control. Accepting that thing is not a weakness. They are ungovernable.
But we are all the time fighting to get things the way we want.
After doing, we claim this is fine. ලේසියට පහසුවට දැනගෙන වැරදි කරනවා එහෙම වුණත් නිදහසට කියන්න කරුණ තියෙනවා නැත්තම් හදලා තියෙනවා that is the way after doing the mistake we justify and we get all the bad things to understand this is something happened to me but think that everything is not under control so please forgive me I am also forgiving so then the equanimity has a chance
actually the birth of frustration takes place here
yeah
You cannot have frustration if you are happy that the mind
can... Sympathizing yourself, yeah. You are accommodating yourself. You see that I am such a perfect person. Things sometimes happen beyond my control. It is in terms of thoughts and feelings and emotions and deeds and everything. So what to do? That is what accepting that things are not under control, things are not governed.
Actually, this little said is very, very, not only very important, very, not only appreciated, because if one can get frustration away from you, that is a huge hurdle jumped up.
Yeah, the Western world now always thinks that the frustration is ever catching, ever increasing.
Every day frustrated, every day, every minute frustrated.
All the infrastructure, all the facilities, every luxuries are there. But the frustration is catching.
Yeah, that's what that is. Yeah, everything is there.
Everything is there.
Frustration is going on.
Because everything is not enough. Still not enough. You have to get everything must be under my control. Each thought is mine. Each feeling is mine. Each emotion mine. So, if it is so, each frustration is yours.
If you can accept the present situation, there is no more frustration.
That being in the present, there is no chance for the frustration. And not only that, acceptance itself is acceptance of imperfection. I'm thinking it is not a crutch. The perfection is the what we think. But it never in this world. This world is something more. That is why Buddha says world is on top of suffering. World is depending on suffering. So they have to accept this as something imperfect. So, whenever Dhammika is writing about his teacher, he says, my teacher is perfectly imperfect. Look at this. My teacher is perfectly imperfect. No problem for me. You also can say, I am perfectly imperfect. So that's the beauty of the nature. That's the natural selection. If everything is perfect, everything will happen just like in Japan. Yeah, boring. If everything is systematized, boring.
Nobody can think it, just make
a difference. He says that there should have a certain amount of lousiness, otherwise no life.
No life.
It is a given fact. Don't try to make everything a utopia and a perfect society and kind of thing. These are the mad words. What is glory? We call it enough. Appreciate it. Then Sankara Upeksha happens, and then no frustration, and no the burning of the candle in the both ends, and no chasing behind the rat race. There's no thinking that he is better than me. He also in the present moment, I am also in the present moment. He also enough, I also enough.
Whole chain of benefits, no?
This is free of charge. Laddha, Mudana, Yuti, Pujyavana. Everything free.
This attachment
and fasting thoughts,
are they also producing
your mind? It's also part of the mind, or? Please repeat the question. Attachment and fasting thoughts,
it's also part of the mind, or?
So it is an unruly situation in the untrained mind. But if you, Buddha says, if you can prepare, you can train it. And that is what we call the disciplining and restraint. It's the early part of your practice. The unruly thing, the speed become velocity. Speed become unruly energy. Velocity means it is directed. So vitakka is a part and parcel of your mind. And if you apply only one to the one object and you become successful, that means the vitakka become disciplined, and you can make sure in future also my mind will be with the breath, not wandering. That is the kind of trick. It's a forceful thing, it's a training, it's a condition of the mind.
So when you say that I have thoughts without a thinker, then whatever I think is vitakka
vichara. So vitakka vichara is a tool. It's a tool at the beginning to discipline your mind. Once the discipline got, it's automatic, just like riding a push bike. At the beginning you have to put effort. But later you will ride it without any effort. The balance is becoming natural. But at the beginning, you can't imagine how can one person ride on this the bicycle.
Like acrobat balancing himself.
Yeah. At the beginning, it is breakneck. Breaking the neck. But at once you did it, you can't imagine why the other people can't do it. It becomes second nature. Once it becomes a second nature, which is an educated practice.
No, the frustrating fact is, we have got used to I am the master of my thing. I have my wishes, and when the wishes are gone, you feel very empty. But that itself is the success of the meditation, you know. We are having wishes.
I would say it's the success of insight. That is the drastically you have to make a statement. That is the success of insight meditation.
About meditation, during meditation, if the brain works and you get memories from childhood, for example, and then suddenly another part of your brain or mind tries to control you, are stopped or something like that, is it possible to continue meditation and ask this somebody who came from the other side, who are you? Or is it necessary to stop? What it is? I had this experience, and the first time I did it, I just cured and stopped meditating, which was really very strong feeling of curing.
And so it is being explained in the inside knowledges, that whole particular stage called Sammasada Jnana. Sammasada Jnana means for the first time, you try to see everything has its own beginning, the middle and the end, and then you are ready to accept it in the cross level. When that happens, all the influx of your senses cut off. Eyes are closed, no sounds, no smell, nothing, even the breath is not more there. And when that happens, still you find the consciousness have equilibrium, even without this influx. So far in our day-to-day life, it is full of influx. Visual object, the sounds and everything. So imagine that mind get that equilibrium and it knows it's got a little distance from the senses. So one master is asking, throughout the life, your task was to give enough senses, enough impingements. But now everything cut off.
How I can cut it? Because it was a meditation. I don't know, what is it? It was a dream or it was something in reality. I saw pictures of my childhood.
So I am going to come to that point.
Yes.
So when the mind come up to that point, the faculties, even we are not giving the influxes, they are working.
Yes, it is it's ever.
Therefore, this is, if there is nothing coming from out to in, it produces from in to out.
Yes.
Projections.
That's what.
And they have your life more than reality. So your basic thing is your child age memory. Or sometimes the past life memories. Because they are the life results. So they project.
Yeah, well, how can I, what can I do in this?
So at that time also, says this is a kind of a reverse journey and take the refuge of your primary object or your body, something verifiable, understand this kind of thing can happen.
Yeah.
Many people have some, get some powers to predict something. Some people are going to hear something. Some people have a visual things. So different thing happens. And many believe these things, that means they are on track. Ignore them, considering now you have cut off the influxes, so therefore faculties are still working, therefore they are projecting outside. So don't take them as very seriously. Don't try to measure and see what is the meaning and all that, and then you get trapped. Instead, be here and now.
In the first step, can you have like a long gap without thoughts, without anything like that happening, and then with hindsight you realize that there is this period, there is nothing ever. The only way to know is that time has elapsed.
So that time, you get confused whether it was a split second or 1 hour. That is the way you understand that memory is there, but you can't comprehend in the normal rational way. There's a lapse.
You know, you can intentionally also have a quiet mind. If you can suggest yourself to have a quiet mind, sometimes it works. But
so once it is mastered, you can do it.
So it's like blackness, but one realizes only with hindsight.
So that only you can realize as a past memory. After that you can realize. While in it, happy life, no, it is just like awakening into a dream. You can't awaken into the dream. After the dream only you can come to this was a dream. That is the way the grip relaxes. Like a spring.
So many things sometimes in life, we intentionally do things. I get into the car, start the car, go to the market, come. So many things are intentionally. But say, if you want to go out, go to the toilet, the inside there's a pressure working, then now the pressure says, go to the toilet. But also there are many things, even in the meditation, we can intentionally suggest. Let me give you a nice line.
Self-suggestion.
Yeah, the mind is peacefully, rocky maybe in the beginning.
Is it necessary?
Why not? Very nice.
What I'm telling is, this kind of thing you can do once you have mastered the meditation and you have experiences. Later you can say, there's a very, very one incident happened there. So, two people are starting telling, one person is telling conventional truth is the correct truth. Other person says, no. There is the absolute truth. Both of them are well-educated, decent people. What doing is sitting in between. And started the argument in a very, very decent manner, but ultimately one person took the chair to hit the other person, telling what the hell you are going to tell. You are going to teach the people that only the conventional truth is the truth. If it is no, you are missing the university, and then they are fine. Conflagration starts. And then the continual thing that he is looking at him. And then the fighting start, he broke himself. And then both of them find there is no one to observe what they are fighting, so fight comes. So everyone got ashamed, because it was a very decent topic, and ultimately they went at the heated argument. And then the person asked, what could you make, what happened to you? He says, I went through all these things and went in. That's all. So therefore everyone get that shock, get that absorption. What is fighting is? Because of the Godwin's withdrawal, and only the spectator, he is the only spectator, he also withdrawn, then what is the fight? Stops. Like some people, those who have experienced, they, what till the thing happened, he the human, then just we do that. It's a comfort zone. Just like a bunker in the war, and if everything is disarmed, you can jump into the bunker and sit yourself.
What really happens in a discussion like this, conventional truth, absolute truth, and intention, you, any person, I think, by training, you can intentionally, if you are playing tennis, right, somebody says, put the ball exactly this, but a very well-trained person can always keep hitting, but he might go wrong, maybe after 10 balls, one ball, he might go wrong, 9 balls, maybe one we will get, you know, so it's a matter of training the mind. So once the mind is trained, it has no difficulties in being quiet and all.
And that is also not the big achievement of meditation also.
Yes.
It's just escape.
But people feel that it's a comfortable, it is very comfortable. So we see comfort. Comfort is not seeing things as they are.
You escape, this is an escapism.
Yeah.
The thing is happening beyond your control. Your children are not listening to you, or your parents are not. What to do? You do it yourself and mind your own business.
I like that.
And it is no injustice. Injustice over there, because otherwise you can maintain your psychology. Mm-hmm. You do.
But then it is not progress, it's just a...
You are not committing anything. They can do that, they are like... But
there's no sin in it, but because sometimes the mind also, when it's just hard to go, it's good to withdraw.
No, not true. But the only thing is, you can come back to your own area and just let things happen as it is. Everything we can't control. So that is the one benefit that one should develop. If you know that everything we can't control, and if it is, we are thinking so, we are omnipotent, omnipresent God. We are not. Let the thing happen as we are on the board. We try and wait.
Can you do that?
Yes.
If there is no one who feels things, then how can the Buddha say there is suffering because of these emotions, of these feelings like tanya and hatred and so? There is no one who feels that and suffers because of these.
I think I go.
No. It's a very good question, but I see who is this man who feels this who's suffering.
So I will give one example. I don't know whether it's fit into. One day when the Buddha is having a discussion, yet another disciple comes to the place. Then he asks, "Do your teacher also teaching the moral restraint?" And the other person says, "Of course, yes, in our tradition, the moral restraint." He asks, "Would you mind to share with us? What is the way your teacher is trained?" He says, "My teacher says, don't kill. If you kill, you will go to the hell and you have to suffer. And don't steal. If you steal, you have to suffer." So likewise, he says, therefore, we restrain. And whatever the thing you do frequently, that will be decided according to the way, and that is your destiny. Then Buddha looking at the Ananda said, in that case, no one will go to the hell. Because most of the time, we are not killing. It is really only we kill, but we are brooding upon the killing, and then only we make it a grave offense. So if you know it is a killing, and I have to get the due punishment, and that's all. If it is so, rest of the time, you are not suffering. So therefore, ultimately Buddha says, once in a way, Ananda, Buddha emerged in the world, he also do the same. He says, don't kill. If you kill, you will get the punishment, therefore, why don't you forget about this and develop kind of loving kindness? Not brooding upon what we have done, not brooding about what you kill. It is, of course, yes, but instead, do the counter. And likewise, if you do one day, he will develop the loving kindness of the whole beings, so that I will tell you that even killing will be not punished due to the power of loving kindness. So therefore, not that feelings have inflicting upon you, but if you are keep on brooding upon that, you are ever suffering. When the feeling happens, you do it and mind your own business and go. The rest of the time, you can do for meditation or keep the mind in the balance. So therefore, thinking that mind is always agitated by my meditation is not good because I am thinking of past memories. So this is the brooding, and again thinking is the matter making us so frustrated. We are not culprits. We are doing little mistakes, but if you are limiting our mistakes up to the mistakes, most of the time we have no malevolent thinking. We never entertain. We entertain only the mistakes we have done. So then who the hell can save us? So that is exactly what, when the pain happens, desire comes. When the pressure happens, when the pain happens, the hate happens. Pressure happens, desire happens. So, but there is a kind of a thing, no pain, no pleasure. If you know it, it's a pleasure. If you don't know, it's a lost. So whenever the no pain, no pleasure happens, it is not merely giving the pleasure, unless otherwise you know it, you appreciate it, that is the meditation. Most of the time we have peace of mind, but we are not entertaining. We are brooding upon the single, simple mistakes we have done. So who the hell can save you?
So with the idea of being perfect, see, if I do mistake and the mistakes are coming towards me, and I want to get rid of my mistake with the idea of becoming perfect. I am a perfect person. But there is also a pride there. No? Yeah.
So you have to understand, mistakes are happening. So to the mistake, there may be punishment, no problem. But keep on brooding upon that and worrying upon that, that is the mistake Buddha says, you are not mindful. You are worrying about the past memories. Who the hell can save you? If you are mindful, you know this is the mistake, and for that you get the punishment, no problem. Rest of the time you have the peace of mind. That is the purpose of mindfulness. That is why we say there are some thoughts without the thinker, don't worry about them. That's a huge portion. These thoughts are called inner thoughts or background thoughts. And if you observe it, they are not trained thoughts. But if you value it, they become trained thoughts, and with the content, and ultimately you will be taken for a ride. But if you ignore it, you can have peace of mind. That is the point to make it. All the thoughts are not your own. All the thoughts have not to be accepted. Just if it is something meaningful, it will come and again you can give the message that most of the thoughts are not so.
The whole thing is karma. Did I commit something? I am getting my karma. So did I? But all these are.
And Westerns, they don't have karmic principle also embedded like the Easterns.
But
they have guilt. I mean, guilt is that ancestral guilt. But the karma and karma theory is a kind of a Western thing. So therefore, Westerns have a different perspective on the same thing.
If you see a 35mm film, each photo is different to the other. But when it's running, we see it as a continuity.
Animation.
So, but he also, everything from states. Neither the same man nor another man. And it's very tough to understand
so
that.
This question, I can, your dilemma, I can really understand.
Yeah.
And that is a task. I can't help you. You have to sort it out. I am giving a challenge. I am giving a kind of a revolutionary thing for you to sort it out. The moment you sort it out, you are the one going to get results. So if it is wrong, you are the one to suffer. So Mark Epstein is a man. The name of the book is Thought Without a Thinker. If you need, you can read it and see how he proved his theory. He is a professor, idea.
It falls under still under opinion and a view. The Mark book.
It is up to you to decide. He has presented it well, and read it and see whether it is valuable or not. For me, it was a really revolutionary, and when I read it, I found that most of the time I am worrying about these unwanted petty thoughts. And when the paroxysm is explaining his days when you are walking, people may come here and there and all the kind of things. Everyone is not come to meet you. So therefore, forget about the pedestrian, you go your way. Then you can go to the distance. If you are waiting and asking everyone why you are in this street and what you are coming face to face with me, you have no rights. You go your path. Let the others also to use the same street.